so exciting to see you doing such a different role. It's wonderfully comic in such a dark, twisted way.
Thank you very much.
What attracted you to it?
I mean, all of the things you just said, and it is really a very original film. I haven't seen anything else like this film. I haven't read anything else like this film. It, as you say at the beginning, it's really funny. I almost had a slip up in my first meeting for this film when I met the director, and I was like, "It's so funny," and he was like, "Yes, but it's not a comedy." He's French, by the way, in case you're wondering what that voice I did was. It's really funny. It has this great. The film falls apart if it doesn't have this wonderful love story in the middle. So there's that kind of deeply tragic but beautiful love story. And then it's got this, you know, slasher, horror, revenge, thriller elements to it as well. So it really is all those things. And for a film to be all that and do it all successfully is really rare and a hard thing to pull off, I felt like. So I was very up for it.
Yeah, hard thing to pull off and a hard thing to describe as well, isn't it, I guess?
Yes, I've actually got my my pitch line for Horns very concise now, which is it is about a guy who, after everyone thinks he has murdered and raped his girlfriend, wakes up one morning growing a pair of horns completely arbitrarily that allow other people, like, that force other people to confess their deepest, darkest sins to him. And so that over a 2-day period, he tries to figure out both who killed his girlfriend and why he has now got horns growing out of his head. So it's not that short, but it's kind of concise.
I think it's quite concise. Yeah. I think it does fairly well
yeah.
and accurately depict it.
Good.
You know, I think you're getting the impression across. Some people are describing it as Harry Potter's evil twin. Have you heard that?
No. I mean, I guess they're always going to find some way of linking it back to Harry Potter. That's the thing. I think that I find, like, because I love Harry Potter and I'm very, you know, okay about talking about all that stuff, but I wish people would get over this idea that every film I do is somehow a statement about the films I used to do, because it's not. Like, I can't go on, like, I'm not going to be 60 and being like, I'm doing this film as an old man to try and get away from my young man image as Harry Potter. You know, it's not like that. But yeah, I mean, I think there's also people that, as soon as the first photos came out of me in the movie, there, you know, that people were talking about the fact that I'm wearing red and gold, which is like the Gryffindor colours. And I'm like, you guys, I can't, like, and you know, it was the same as when in the beginning of Kill Your Darlings, like the first shot of me is me sweeping stuff up. So I have a broom in my hand. Not the same type of broom, like, not even a little bit, you guys, but you know, I accept that things are always going to be related to Potter. I just hope that people can, like, see this film, you know, as a standalone thing. But if people want to call it Harry Potter's, you know, evil twin, I'm kind of okay with that, actually. It's quite a, you know, they were calling the romantic comedy I did over the summer When Harry Potter Met Sally, which was, like, okay, kind of a bit obvious, but, you know, Harry's evil twin, I'll take.
Well, in actual fact, I've got a compliment for you, though, because when John Hamm was with us, he told us that he really respects the transition that you've made from Harry Potter into your other roles, and he wants to sort of base his journey from Don Draper into other things on what you've done.
Oh, well, that's very kind of him. He's, he's far too kind saying something like that. That's really cool. I mean, I think if I can become, like, a blueprint for people getting out of a big franchise, and I think... The thing is, John saying that about me is interesting, but I think John would have done exactly what I've done anyway, which is you sort of accept that you've done, you know, maybe the most successful thing you're ever going to do. Like, for a lot of people, John will be Don Draper for some time, and as I will be Harry Potter. So I think he uses that probably as just carte blanche to be like, well, I can do what I like then, and I have an opportunity for a while to just do interesting, weird things that, you know, that he likes. I mean, and you know, he's... I think he's picking some really cool... I saw him recently because he was over here filming... He's over here filming Black Mirror, but please check that in case that hasn't been announced yet, because I don't want to be, like, announcing that. So he was over here filming that, and that was... It was very, very cool to see him. But that's very nice of him to say.
He was also telling me all about how you talk about cricket.
I tried, man. It's hard. It is... Explaining cricket to an American is very difficult, because you will always get to a point where an American just looks at you and go... But why? Like, where you'll get to a point where you'll be saying, you know, it took the last 5 days. And they're like, 5 days? But that's the thing. When you watch American sport, as I have now done quite a lot of, you get why there is such a problem with cricket. Because there is no sport, like, their longest game is baseball. And that lasts, you know, a few hours maximum, unless it goes into overtime. And every single game ends with a result. Like, in hockey, there are no draws. In NFL, you can get a tie, but it's really hard to do. So it's they're just used to like instant gratification, and so yeah.
And singing in the stands and things as well. It's like it's such a different experience, isn't it? I guess.
Well, yeah, we have I think the English are really good at chants and spontaneous singing and spontaneous like very clever chants being made up. That's the one thing. I went to an NFL game last year, and the chants they have are terrible. Like they start the Jets quarterback is Geno Smith, so I started to try and get like a version of Geno, the Dexys Midnight Runners song, going. Wasn't happening. Not enough people know that song today, and then their chant was just J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 which is terrible. So, you know, they need to take a leaf out of some of the England fans. I mean, I definitely remember there were some amazing ones in the sort of 90s about Cantona and Emmanuel Petit. There were just some good chants we had, yeah.
We're good at it. It's the thing that we're good at. I'm going to jump back again, though, sure. To the film. Because obviously you had those wonderful prosthetics.
Yes.
How was that, having those put on every day?
It was great, actually. I mean, it was. I've done prosthetic work before, and I thought, oh, it's going to be horrible, because it can be. It can be a really odd, not particularly pleasant experience. And they made it so much easier than I ever thought it was going to be. The horns themselves were off and on in like 20 minutes. They were very, very quick to do. And then towards the end of the movie, when I had like some bigger makeups being put on for various reasons, which I won't reveal. You know, even that, like the makeup I have at the end of the film, which as you will see is extensive, that took 2 hours, which is nothing compared to what other people have done for those kind of full body makeups. So, you know, that was incredible.
Was stuff done in post then, or?
Like, not much. Like, a very little bit would have been done in post, but really not very much. I mean, it's the work they did, their names are Mike Fields and Mike McCarthy, and the work they did on me every morning was great. And they're both great, because they'd never met before, but for the first week I thought that they were lifelong friends, because they looked like two sides of the same coin. Mike McCarthy was just like huge big biker guy with long black hair, dressed all in leather, and then Mike Fields was this like short guy, also dressed all in leather with spiky blonde hair. They're both obsessed with heavy metal. And so we just like listened to like Megadeth and Metallica and God, any other band, and much more obscure bands than that that I don't know that Mike was getting into. We just listened to that every day while we got ready. It was awesome.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I have to admit, I went to the Harry Potter studio tours for the first time last week. I've been wanting to go. You've never been?
I have not been. No.
Oh, you should go.
Well, that's the thing. I was out of town for the opening of it, which is like the only conceivable time I could go and not cause a scene. I don't know. What I'll probably have to do at some point is, if I get to make a film at Leavesden Studios again, I'll just find like a time at the end of the day when it's all closed down and go around and see it all.
Well, it's incredibly done. They've just opened a new bit, because they've got this dark art section.
Oh, cool.
So they've got Borgin and Burks, and then they've got the Malfoys dinner table with Charity Burbage hanging over it, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
But what struck me actually,
poor actress, man.
She's just hanging there all the time now.
She did, but she really, when we did that scene, she was there for a long time.
Bless her.
I was like, oh, you're just hanging there.
Well, what really struck me actually, though, is the incredible work that goes on behind the scenes, isn't it?
It's amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. And I know that you've sort of expressed an interest before in saying you might want to go behind the scenes. Do you think you might do that? Are you going to get behind?
I think I was too surrounded by the best crew members and directors growing up to not want to direct. Like, I mean, I remember I was really flattered towards the end of my time on Potter. One of the studio execs, and one of the people I had a huge amount of respect for, called Roy Button, who's head of Warner Brothers Europe, I think. He said, you know, if he was on a film with me and the director suddenly went down and was ill, he said he would feel comfortable putting me in to do it. And I was like, that's a huge compliment. And he said to me, honestly, Dan, if you spent this much time on film set and you have this enthusiasm for it, it would be a waste if you never did anything with that. And I just thought, you know, and he took the time to say that to me at a time when he didn't need to, or, you know, so that made me think, okay, well, I do want to do this. And also, the other thing I'd say, just if anyone who can't get to that studio tour, and it's super weird for me to be sitting here plugging Harry Potter stuff, but if anyone can't get to that studio tour, the book Harry Potter Page to Screen, I think it's called, That's if you want to know about the series, that's the best book you can get, because I've had to sign it a while ago for somebody, and I actually started looking through it, and I was like, this is amazing, because this is the details of all the people that work there, not just like me, Rupert and Emma, and like how we grew up in a place which everyone sort of has an idea about now. These are the actual people that formed our childhoods, and that's like that book is like a huge testament to all of them.
And I was going to say, obviously there's new films coming out prior to Harry. Maybe you should get behind the scenes on those.
No, I don't think so. I definitely not. No, I mean, that's I would like my first film I ever make to not be like hundreds of millions budget and huge amounts of pressure to make it, you know, a huge hit.
A nice little independent film
That's mine.
You have been on the Star Wars set recently.
I have. Is that known?
It is known.
How is that known? Was that on Twitter or was that
it's, what? It's on the interwebs.
Okay, right. Yeah. No, I did. I went, but just purely for a visit, because like I'm not in the film at all.
Are you not even in like some kind of costume?
Sneaky extra. I know they have done that with some people. I won't say who. But they not with me. I was literally there because all of my friends are working on it. All the crew from Potter have basically gone on to the heads of the hair and makeup department, tons of people in the costume department. The first AD is somebody who worked with me on my first ever film before Potter. Like, I just know everyone on that set, so it was very cool to go on and meet them all.
Must have been amazing. And, finally, so we work with Heat, and they've listed you as the second richest 30 under 30.
Oh, right, okay.
I know. Bit awkward that people know your bank balance, I guess.
Because they don't. No. They just guess.
They do.
Who's number one?
One Direction. I don't think it counts.
There's five of them.
I know. They're listing them together, aren't they?
Not that I care about this.
It's not really
I'm
my position
first.
To say.
No, I mean, it's always weird. There is a great obsession in this country with money. And I also think there's a tendency to... you know, money's a weird thing. I'm very lucky because I've always been in a position where I have had it, and so it has never been a motivating factor in my life. And the great thing about it is that it does mean that, you know, there is a level of stress that is just removed from your life, which is awesome. But beyond that, it doesn't solve any problems of like life or relationships or the world. You know, it's really weird to me that people are so. In this country particularly, that's what's weird, is that we think of America as being sort of much more sort of capitalist and I don't know, is the word avaricious? I don't know. But I think in England we sort of have a weird obsession with it, because particularly if like someone's like me and they got it very young for doing a job that actually everyone would quite like to do, there's a certain amount of like, should you really have that money? Because I don't think, like, actors, we just happen to get paid ridiculously well for the job that we do. You know, there's no justification for it. It's just the fucking weird world. Sorry. It's just the very odd world that we live in. But yeah, and you know, it's an odd thing that people are so obsessed with it. But you know, there was one really annoying thing. I think, is it the Times that always does the rich list?
Yeah, I think they do another one.
A few years ago, they put, like, I was one of the people on their poster campaigns for their rich list edition. But it was for like. And it was my face, but put up against, like, my face changing over the 10 years with a correlation of like my bank balance through it the whole time. And they put it like they didn't put it just there, but like there was one of those posters literally at the end of my road. And I was like, so everyone who like I live with and was seeing this thing every day, I was less than pleased about that, because it is like it's an odd thing. It's slightly embarrassing. I've never known quite how I feel about it.
Are you quite generous though?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not like, I don't spend money on anything for myself, really, because I can't think of what I would spend that much money on. But yeah, I think I try to. The one thing money does is it allows like me to facilitate certain things in my life that might be harder otherwise. So I can, you know, if I'm going out for a big dinner, I can like book a nice room for my friends to come in, and like it's stuff like that it does make easier. But yeah, generally speaking, I think I'm generous. I'm not stingy. No.
Well, everyone knows how much you've got now, you see,
exactly.
So you can't get away with it.
I'd better start spending. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
You.
Really appreciate
Cheers.
It.